And I thought, if no Brian Bulaga, I got to talk to Dave Robinson because someone told me I have to call him. Of course, Dave Robinson is the Hall of Fame linebacker with the Green Bay Packers. And because there was something on Twitter about the best tight end, and they were saying Mike Ditka, and I said, no, John Mackey. And someone said, you're going to get a call from Dave Robinson. And I said, why? He said, because he's going to tell you that Ron Kramer is the best tight end ever. So thought I better get Packer Hall of Famer Dave Robinson on to find out if that's true. Hall of Famer, were they right when they said you would say it should be Ron Kramer?
Yes, I would. You know, Ron Kramer was an all-around athlete. He wasn't featured because we didn't feature that much at the passing game when he was there. The one year I was with him, you know, in the championship game, the first championship game that Buttsaw won, he was 9 out of 12, and he wiped New York up much to see. I think it's like 27-0 or something. But Ron Kramer had 3 catches, and Jim Taylor had 3 catches, and I think Boyd Dowell had 3 catches. But the thing about Ron Kramer, he was Mr. Michigan. He high jumped 6'4". He was All-American, 6'7", excuse me. He's All-American in basketball and All-American in football. He was on the All-American team. I think he was second team in the basketball. But he was an all-around athlete, and he could do it all. He had big, huge hands. He was strong. He was about 250. He was tough to handle. Now, I will
all
say
right,
this.
Hold on. Let me.
John Mackey was a lot better than Mike Ditka. I'm going to put that with that right now.
Yeah, you damn right he was. I was growing up watching John Mackey with the Baltimore Colts. I claim that there are plays in which they ran highlights that he broke more than 13. He broke more than 11 tackles because he would break a tackle, and then the guy would run up with him, get to him again, and he'd break another tackle. I believe if someone checks that John Mackey broke 13 tackles at least once in his career. Do you think that's possible?
I think he did. I saw one time he had this pass screen, that little pass play he did, and he at least 9 or 10 guys hit him as he went down the right side of the field and went all the way for a touchdown. He finally broke loose and went for a touchdown. I can't remember who it was. I just remember seeing the film and watching the film, and Joe Banks, our defensive coordinator, told me, don't let Mackey make this play. Don't lay him off the ball, because the key to it, he had to get off the ball. You know, Mackey and I were real good friends. One time he said, we're in Baltimore. He said, Rob, he said, look, do me a favor. Let me off the ball just one time. I said, what? We were in Baltimore at that time, by the way. He said, let me off the ball just one time. I said, if I do, I'm going to have to be here with you because I can't get on the plane with Vince. And he just laughed. And we went right back at it.
All right, talking with Dave Robinson. I want to interrupt for 1 second because you've talked about Ron Kramer, and any Packer I've talked to always says, like, Ron Kramer might have been the best overall athlete of anybody there. And you're right. He was the leading scorer in football and basketball and track.
Right.
And so it led me to think, I'm guessing if I took a poll, if there's one player on the Packers who's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and should be, that the majority of you would pick him. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
That he was that good.
The problem is that we didn't get publicity in those days. When I first started in the league, I had people tell you, I looked at the Packer game all the whole game and only saw you 1 or 2 times. Because they only kept the ball on the ball carrier. People didn't run my way. If they did run my way, I made the tackle. Wasn't of interest to put on the TV. It was horrible in the old days. People like Ron Kramer just didn't get the publicity. I know lots of times, some of my best games, nobody knew about it because they never showed it because they're always trying to show the offense.
But you are in the NFL Hall of Fame. I mean, eventually.
I played later.
Well, eventually, they got you in. And I think that they need, you need to be the president, and I need to, with another fact. See if this is accurate. The greatness of the power sweep was more because of the greatness of Ron Kramer as a tight end blocker than any other player. Doesn't mean they weren't important. It could be close. But the greatness of that and the power sweep was never as great by the Packers as it was with him after he left. It's not like it got bad. But either way, is it correct to say that the tight end is that most position? And when you are as great an athlete and blocker as Ron Kramer won, He, more than anybody else, was a part of the reason for the greatness. Yes or no? Or am I going too far?
You need to be applauded. I'll tell you, not too many people would realize that, but the power sweep, the Green Bay power sweep, the key person in the power sweep is the tight end. When Fuzzy and Jerry, when they pull, they don't worry about where the defensive backs are, what this, that. They just watch the tight end, and he tells them whether to go inside, outside. And once they do, then it's just a piece of cake. The man that sets that play is the tight end. Marv Fleming did a good job, too, because he tried to copy Ron, but Ron was a lot bigger, massive, and he could handle more. You know, when they come up there, I'll tell you a little secret now. I'll probably get, if Vince found out, well, he's dead, so what the hell. When the two guards pull, the lead guard looks at no one but Ron Kramer. If he can read the numbers on his back, 88, then he turns up inside. That means Ron's blocking everything out. If he can't see the number 88, he can't read it, he goes outside. That means Ron's blocking in. And that was the key to the, that was the key. And that, once those guards decided inside, outside, that's when the whole play developed.
So they Ron didn't Taylor know was one preferred or the other, or did they not know, knowing that it could go either way? Or
either way.
All right.
When they called the play, they didn't know nothing. When they pulled and looked, Ron Kramer, and now Ron's job was to take the linebacker in or out, whichever he let him do. If the linebacker was doing an outside move, Ron took him out, and they turned up inside. Linebacker was trying to close, he took him in, they went outside.
All right.
I tell you, Ron Kramer was the key to the sweep, the key.
All right.
And in order to stop the, that's why we could stop the sweep when people ran against us, because what Leroy and I
that's
did,
a great point.
We played the tight end straight back. We drove him straight back and drove him into the backfield. Then we could slide off and go whichever way the guards went. That's why the sweep didn't work against us.
Well, that makes sense that I never had discussed. Like, if the play was so good, wouldn't other teams have just copied it and had success? And the fact is, I don't remember anybody. Did you play against any other team that copied that play and did it well?
No, not well.
Wow.
The other teams, when they scouted us, they said, you just follow the guards. If the guards go inside, you go inside. The guards go outside, you go outside. They never said why the guards went one way or the other.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Yeah. They always told them, and they left up. Other teams made it up for that first guard, that lead guard, to make a decision, go inside or outside. And that's how they meant. I went to Washington. They ran it that way. When I was in Washington, I told him, that ain't the way we ran it to Green Bay. I told George Allen. He just laughed like hell. But
wow, so you're with it. Right. So here's my day. I always want to get you on to have things, because if you agree with it, then people are going to accept it. If I say it, they think I'm crazy. All right, Dave Robinson, one.
You're crazy
Ron,
anyway now.
Ron Kramer should be in the NFL Hall of Fame. You agree
I
with
think
that?
So.
All right. Now, you I know he didn't play
he
that much.
Been.
Left to go to Detroit or something. Go ahead.
Yeah, because if he hadn't gone to Detroit, he would be in Hall of Fame right now.
All right,
because
two.
There's no doubt in my mind that he would have got the publicity he needed and people would have followed him. He would have been in the Hall of Fame right now if he hadn't gone to Detroit.
I don't know.
But
they have the veterans
that was a family matter.
Yeah, I don't know if it's too late for him to get in. All right, number two, I have said that the greatest part about Vince Lombardi that people don't understand was that he was an offensive genius. Because, on the other hand, he didn't know crap about defense, not because he didn't care, but because he was an offensive guy. Now, people have said, Homer, you're making that up again. So Dave Robinson, assess Vince Lombardi, his greatness, offense versus defense, and thus, this is why he had to give the job to Phil Bankston, because he recognized that if it hadn't been for Bankston's knowledge of defense, they never would have won those titles. Now it's up to you to agree or disagree with me.
I agree. I'll tell you, the big thing was Vince Lombardi was a student of the game, and he did. Vince Lombardi knew offenses. But even in practice, when the offense was running against us, if somebody got free, got loose, Vince would always turn to Phil Banks and say, Phil, whose man was that? And Phil said, that's Robinson's man there. Robbie, what the hell are you doing out here? And he'd scream like he knew it. He didn't know it was my man. He didn't understand the defensive philosophy. He knew he could spot weaknesses in the defense. He could spot things like that. But his big thing was offense. He was all offense. And he was offensive coordinator on that great Giants team in the overtime game, the first one NFL. That's one of the greatest games of all time. He was offensive coordinator, and he wanted the Giants to go for it when it was 4th and 1 on the very first drive in overtime. Because now anybody scores wins the game, field goal, anything. And Vince wanted to go for it at 4th and 1. And Tom Landry was the defensive coordinator. He told Jim Lee Howell, the head coach, he said, look, we should punt the ball and let my defense hold them. And Jim Lee Howell sided with Landry. They punted. Johnny Unitas took the ball, marched down the field. Amici goes in for a touchdown. Greatest game in history, goes to the Baltimore Colts. This was the first overtime game. It was a game that turned the whole NFL around. If they listen to Vince Lombardi, it may never have been that way.
All right, Vince Lombardi's an offensive genius. I nailed that one. But was it back then? Did he never want to call the plays? Did no coaches that were offensive-driven call plays? Because my understanding was that Bart Starr called all the plays. What?
Yeah.
Was there any quarterback? Go ahead.
Back in those days, the quarterback did. They weren't wired up like they are now. You couldn't talk to them or anything else. Bart Starr and Zeke Pacowski later and Vince Lombardi used to have long hours after practice. They'd stay there and study, and Vince would tell him what he wanted to do and such downs and situations. And Bart had it. And when he came on the field, Bart lined up on the field, it's amazing what Bart did. Bart Starr could look around and say, "This is down the situation and this the offense." That they looked like they're going to give me a little left report. And the other thing was, he also got feedback from his line, which Vince could never get because he couldn't do it in those days. It's like, let's say Skoronski stepped on his defensive end's foot and the guy was limping a little bit. He'd come out the tunnel and tell Bart, hey, my man's limping. I stepped on his foot. And bam, right at him, they go. Look, and then when you got a guy upstairs and he's got a mic in his hand and he looks at that and says, oh, it's 3rd and 6 on a 38. Now, this is what they usually run in defense, and he calls the play with no feedback of what's really going on in the field. He has no feedback at all. Bart Starr got that feedback. When every player came back to the huddle, they told Bart Starr if there's a weakness in their man, my man is limping. My man is I hit him in the stomach, and he's little things, yeah. And that's what Bart Starr called him.
Zeke Brankowski. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I said
the greatest play in Green Bay Packer history. Yeah. Greatest play in Green Bay Packer history was when we went for it on 4th down and scored the touchdown to win the Ice Bowl. But who called the play? Everybody knows Bart Starr did. He came to the line and told Vince, "Hey, listen, I can do it. The other guys can't get their footing." Bart Starr called the play.
Yeah,
Vince
but wait,
said, okay,
whoa,
get
whoa.
In there and run it.
I hate to disagree with Dave Robinson. He only got to use that play because Vince Lombardi said fine, correct? Vince Lombardi could have said
Vince,
no.
He suggested a play to Vince, and Vince said, go ahead and run it.
Right.
Let's get
so
the hell
Vince,
out of here.
Vince could have said, hey, no, I don't think we can do that. But anyway, back to Zeke Brankowski.
Vince had the faith in Bart Starr's calling that a lot of people, and you may be signed to say it too, didn't think that Bart Starr could call the faith. Bart Starr could probably call the whole game without Vince's input at all, but Vince and Bart were in tune. They were Vince, Bart Starr, and Zeke Pacowski. Those three were in one mindset. They played the game that way. I'll tell you, I don't like personally the guy upstairs calling plays because he misses so much. There's so many things on the field that go on that only a guy who is playing can go back and give you the input. That you got to run off tackle play because I got my man is limping. I can take this guy inside. He's upstairs. All he knows
so
is
so. Would you have
situation.
That guy on the field if he's calling the plays? You would still have him down on the field where he can interact with the players.
Well, it's not that way. It's a huddle. You got to. It's a huddle where the interaction is. You know, they come. These guys. In the old days, you call some of the linemen. They'll tell you every play. They come back and. Especially the play that wasn't successful. Bart Starr asked him why it wasn't successful, and he'd tell him, and he'd say, well, next time we'll do this to correct that.
Did you have the same discussions on the defensive huddle?
Defense is even different, I'll tell you that. When they did something, no matter what it was to me, when I went back to the huddle, the first thing I did was say, Leroy, if your man comes up, his left leg is back, he's going to da-da-da-da-da and tell him. If he comes up and he's got all the freedom on his front, on his hand, he's going to da. Now, if they do it to Leroy, that's why people normally what you do in a football game, you run a play on one side, say to the right, and you're successful at it. you're waiting, waiting, waiting. About five or six plays later, you run the same play to the left. When you did that against the Green Bay Packers, that second one was stopped dead. And one of the big plays, I had a great game. I'm bragging now, against the Giants in Yankee Stadium in 1967. We were number one defense, and the Giants were number one offense. And the first play, or the first series anyway, they ran it by me where the fullback came up and tried to put a right shoulder block on me and drive me out. Well, I overplayed him. I jammed him, and I closed that hole, that off-tackle hole, right? And the running back, instead of running off-tackle, he never tried to go up that hole. He just went way to the outside. And the only man out there to be the split in was Homer Jones. He took off on a fly and took Herb out of there. There's nobody. He just walked it. And so when the play was over, I went to huddle and I said, Leroy, if that fullback comes up on that from that formation, we called it a brown. And a brown formation, I said, he's going to look like he wants to lock out, but they want you to bite. When you close the hole, the runner's going to go outside. And two plays later, ran on Leroy, and bam, no gain.
He got him.
He ran back at me, bam, no gain. We stopped that play after one successful run because we talked.
All right, I got to talk now. Zeke Bradkowski, yeah. I brought him up because people were talking about how well Willis has played. I want to talk about backup quarterbacks, the importance of Zeke Bradkowski to your championships, and the current Packers. Round two with the Hall of Famer, Dave Robinson, and yes, he agreed with me. Vince Lombardi didn't know crap about defense. Next.
This is the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Do you have a car boat, ATV, or motorcycle taking up space in storage in your garage? Consider donating it to Rawhide Youth Services. I went there, co-founded in 65 by Bart and Sherry Starr. Faith-based nonprofit that helps thousands of youth every year. People have been donating cars for a long time. They are like experts. eBay, all the other stuff, they need vehicle donations. They'll do it right. Your vehicle donation can make a difference. The best you can do to help is to give them a car and all those things because they'll get as much as possible to help. Rawhide.org/donate and learn how you can play today. Bart Starr donated his Super Bowl winning MVP car. I believe a red Corvette. I think I have that right. Talking with the only thing, this is how good Dave Robinson is. The only thing he does better than football, and he's in the NFL Hall of Fame, is tell stories about the Green Bay Packers. The greatest storyteller ever. And Jerry Kramer is very good, but Dave Robinson is right up there with him, just didn't write as many books. All right, Dave, Zeke Bradkowski has come up because I talked about it and people don't remember because old, because of the play of Malik Willis as a backup, and I said, and I looked this up, in like 66 and 67, he was spectacular when he had to fill in for Bart Starr. And you've alluded to how important he might have been in the meeting. So explain how important he was, even though he was just a backup.
Well, he was the backup, but like I said, he, Vince and Zeke and Bart all met way into the hours of the night. When I was home and or stopped by to get a beer in downtown and home having dinner with my wife, they were down with Coach Lombardi going over the game plan and what they were going to do and how they're going to affect things. And more than just that, they pinpointed guys on the defense and said, look at the weaknesses and the strengths, what they did on a certain situation. So because you got to remember, the quarterbacks are calling their own plays. They came out and they had to know who was weak and who was strong on their own 20, and who was weak and who was strong on the opposite 20. Where's the weakest spot when the ball's in the middle of the field? They had to do it. They kept checking all those things. And you know, you did say something. You said that Vince didn't know anything about the defense. Vince did. What Vince knew was he could spot the weakness of the defense. Vince was a great offensive mind. If I said that wrong, it may sound like Vince didn't know what he's doing. Vince,
all right, hold on. Let me try take two. And Vince Lombardi had nothing to do with the Packer defense. He knew defense, but he looked at defense as to how his offense would work best. He let Bengston handle 150% of the defense.
Right.
How's that? Right. Is that true?
That's true.
All right.
But also, Vince, when he got the microphone, so to speak, when he was in front of the crowd, he inspired every man on that squad, offense, defense, special team, anybody. He just had that ability to get to you. and talk to you. And then almost, and he didn't say it exactly. He got to the point where you thought that if you didn't do what Vince said, it was going to hurt your family and your children. Even he made it so that every, not just the pride of the Packers, but the pride, your internal pride, the whole Robinson family would be upset if I didn't play well.
All right, let me follow up on that. You're a great player. Didn't you at some point go, ah, Vince, coach, I've heard that one before. You're not saying that to him. But the premise is that some coach, they say after a certain period of time, coach's ability to motivate their team, it just loses something. You say that never occurred with Lombardi in his time there. You never felt that.
When he said something, I would say, I heard that before, and it worked. I'm going to do it again. A lot of times, it wasn't so much he was telling me something new. It reminded me of how I handled the Mackey, for instance. As far as his cat, Vince has come down and talked to me at one-on-one. Phil talked to me one-on-one. And Paul Hannah, who was a great guy, he talked to me, don't let Mackey do this, because they were afraid if Mackey got one-on-one on Tom Brown, he'd beat him for a touchdown. Now, Tom Brown was a good safety, a good strong safety, because he cut and tackled and everything else. But he couldn't cover Mackey if we didn't hold him up and give him off the ball. And when Johnny Unitas brought that ball up and he saw Mackey wasn't covered, he'd pull down and go to the number two receiver. And that's what he did it. And Vince kept reminding us of that. Vince was really the guy that, he's like in front of a big orchestra. He's like the conductor with the little stick conducting everything. That guy may not know how to play the violin or the horn or something or the drums, but he knew how to wave the baton and get everything together and make a unit of it. That's what Vince is. Vince may not be able to do a lot of stuff, but he knew enough that he knew how to inspire every one of the 11 men on that field, be they offense or defense.
What irritated the most? What did you always, every day think, I better not do this, or I'm gonna have to deal with Vince Lombardi? And you saw him maybe irritated.
Yeah. The one thing he did was when somebody did that lackluster, if he felt you didn't give your all on the play, let's say you had a bad ankle and you favored it or something, he would say, if it hurts, get off the field and let somebody else come on and do it. He felt that when you were out there, it was all, he was a tough man. He was a right guard and a center blocks of granite, and it's small. And he had to go up against big guys, and big guys in those days are 210 and 220. And they just beat the heck out of him. And he wore the old Notre Dame helmet with no face mask, when his face just got there. He just beat him up and split him up. But he had no quit in him. And he thought that every man, offensive, defense, every man, all the 22 guys on that line, on that field, had to give their best. And he was the guy that would holler at you if he didn't give your best. Now, I will admit that, if I made a mistake, which I very seldom did, that's it. But anyway, if I made a mistake, he'd call Phil, ask Phil, who blew that one? He said, Robinson. And then he'd yell at me, Robinson, what the hell are you doing out here? That was Vince Lombardi.
Right,
that was
now,
the essence
what,
of it.
When was the happiest you ever saw Vince Lombardi? Or when, what pleased him the most, and you could see it and feel it as far as any player or the team? When was there, you won so much, but.
I'll tell you, there's a couple of times. The one time when we won the third championship, that was the happiest I ever saw Vince in life. He came out and grabbed me and hugged me, and I backed off, didn't want to kiss him, but he was that cut. But he was, and I tell you, there's no other times when we went in the Yankee Stadium, underdogs, and the number one defense versus the number one offense, the Giants, like Homer Jones and Van Tartt and all that. When we won that game and Frank Sinatra came in, and he could stand up in front of Frank Sinatra and say, this is my team. And then, he was happy. He was excited. He had a lot of big moments, Vince did. And that was a big moment in his life. And when people said that the Super Bowl was going to be something, and he predicted a blowout, and he called off the dogs. We won 35-10. We could have scored another 10, 20 points. He called off the dogs.
All right, we're about out of time. But I want I want you to talk about this year's team, the defense, or whatever stands out most to you watching the team this year.
Well, I like it. The team that they seem to be inspired. They play. They go. They fire, man. They have no quit in them. I see some things that they do different than we did. I can't really evaluate them because I don't know what their assignments are. But and why is I tell you for a backup quarterback, I think he's a great asset to us. I don't think anybody on the team would worry about him coming in to replace Love if he had to. Love is a man. They know he's a man, and he's going to be a man if they go to the championship, take from there. But they know that Wise can come in at any time and lead that team down
and
the field.
And I believe your team thought the same about Zeke Gradkowski, correct?
We did.
Yeah.
You did, right. We did. And that was it have to be like that. We did. We never, when it Bart went out, we never said, oh, God, there goes a quarterback. We said, well, we got to do things a little different for Zeke. And that was it. Because now you know every quarterback has a little idiosyncrasies that you have to tune in. You do something just a little bit different for Zeke than you do for Bart. But you did them. And you know, one thing about my team, we never blamed the other guy. If they ran an off-tackle play in there, and I thought that Willie tried to play the trap more than he should have, and the off-tackle came in, I never went in and told Willie he went and played the trap. I told him, I didn't cover for you. And that's how we were.
Wow.
And we played.
Any defensive player, my last question, any defense or a defensive player or two that you watch now and like? Because it sounds to me like the game has changed so much. We'll save that for another conversation. They don't even wear pads on their knees. There are guys wearing shorts. Those are shorts, aren't they? Am I making
right? You're right. Why wear pads when they don't use them? They don't use pads like we do.
I know.
So why wear them? They don't use them. Why wear them? I really can't pinpoint right now and say what I think this guy is irreplaceable or somebody. He's the guy I want to watch all the time. I watch the linebackers, but the linebacker play is so different. You know, after the time the linebackers are off the ball 5 yards, you can't hit the guy after 5 yards. And we played right up on the line of scrimmage. I remember when I got the good tight ends, and I would just tell Tom Brown, this guy will not get off the line quick. I will hold him up and hold him and beat him up and stop him. Now they don't even do that. I'll tell you this. I believe in my heart, and I'm talking about another guy, and I don't care if he's telling him or not. Kelsey, if I was playing against him, I'd be right on the line of scrimmage. And he would not get off the ball.
Yeah.
I'd have my forearm and shoulder right in
his
chest.
You can handle any of the tight ends playing today. How about Gronkowski? He would have been tough.
He's not hit now. I don't know how tough he is.
Oh.
That downfield when he's been running
free.
I want to hit him. That's right. I want to make contact right on the line of scrimmage. If the quarterback's got a real quick, right now, he can take the ball, snap, look up, hit the tight end. Tight end's got 5 yards to run before he has any contact, and he looks like a great receiver. If you jam him at the line of scrimmage and hit him hard, now hard enough to make him think about it. And also, they give you tips. If you've been hitting him like that, and he wants to get inside, he'll move inside, and they give you tips. They'll get back off the ball so they can give a head and shoulder fake before they come, kinds of stuff.
All right, when we talk next, I'm going to lead with, right. Have you seen any tight end that would have been tough for you? Who is the toughest tight end for you to play? I assume it's Mackey. It had to be Mackey.
Well, yeah, Javon Cranmer, tell you too, when he went to Detroit. I tell you the story about the line.
All right, we're going to save that
more,
for the
more,
next time.
More fun. I enjoyed it more.
Okay? Really?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a couple of tight ends that were just a piece of cake. And I did not enjoy playing against them. But the Ryan Kramers and the Mike Dickers and the John Mackeys, I went to bed at night saying, I got to get ready for these guys in the morning. And how I did against them was how I judged myself.
Yep.
If I had a tight end, I won't remember, I'm thinking of a guy right now who was, as far as I was concerned, was a sissy. If I had a great game against him, I can't say I had a great game. I just say I had a great game against a guy that couldn't block his way out of a paper sack. You know,
all right. Well, I always appreciate this. We will do it again, and I will now ask you, any tight ends you like yet? It'll be hard because, like you say, the game's different, so you don't know if they could handle what you would do because they're not required to. All right, you're the best.
And the blocking, there's no blocking. The tight ends I had were great blockers, the ones I hated. Okay.
All right.
I'll say, hey, Homer, it's been a real pleasure. I probably said something that gets back to the commission or to the NFL or agreement. I'll probably get exercises, but
you know why?
I can't pull it back.
It's not when you're the Hall of Famer, but we're going to work on what would be necessary to see about the possibility of Ron Kramer getting into the Hall of Fame. I'll have an update for you the next time
I think. Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bet. He's the only Hall of Famer, best storyteller, well, the equal of Jerry Kramer. Dave Robinson, Jason Wilde next.